Okay, we start here on the bottom of Nun Hey Amud Bet by the two dots. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk, Ashrei Adam Mifached Tamid? Lucky is the one who is always fearful. Umakshe Libo Ipo Bera. And the one who hardens his heart will fall to evil. So now, the Gemara will explain this right away, the Rishonim, both Rashi, Tosafot, note over here that this isn't a definitive statement of the Gemara, because we find in other places, the Gemara in Brachot, which says that chataim, pachadu betzion chataim, that pachad or fear is associated with chait, and therefore over here, you have ashrei adam mefached tamid, doesn't sound like the two match up, because over there it's saying that you're fearful when you sin. Over here it says that you should be fearful all the time. That's a positive trait. So Tosfot over here explains, umukila b'divrei Torah, shdoeg shlo yishkach talmudo, v'chuzer mishnato tamid. So the Gemara, in reconciling this stira, says there's different types of fear. There's a fear, just an unfounded, persistent fear, which derives from sinning. But there's another type of fear, which is a fear that a person has of losing what he's learned, a fear that helps the person to engage in positive, constructive activities, like learning more, reviewing their learning, because they're afraid of losing their learning. That's Ashrei Adam Mifached Tamid. We're going to have a bunch of examples here, and what Tosafot says is that over here, this is the problem, is that these individuals were so certain of themselves and so relied on their merits and their social standing that they did things that were totally wrong. And those things lead to very bad outcomes, as we're going to see here. The Churban HaBayit, the Churban HaBeitar, so on and so forth, all came out of these stories where people were too confident in their standing, and they lacked this Ashrei Adam Mifached Tamid. That's not like somebody who fears for naught, and that's where the Gemara describes as someone who is fearing because they are a sinner. Over here, we're talking about a fear that comes out of a certain amount of confidence that a person has. You should still have an offsetting fear that it's not always going to be this way. The status quo is not permanent, and you have to worry about that. Shema yigrom achet, shema, shema. And that's a fear that is constructive in nature. And that's lacking in these stories, and that's what leads or precipitates to the bad outcome. And that's why the Gemara here quotes this pasuk, which otherwise is associated with positive fear, here, because they lacked it. They lacked this positive fear, and therefore led to the bad outcomes. And that is, Akamsa Bar Kamsa Charuv Yerushalayim, and the famous story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Artana Gola, Artana Golata, Charuv Tur Malka. Tur Malka, which will be in tomorrow's daf, was destroyed because of the story of a tarnagol and a tarnagolet, a chicken and a rooster. Asaka derispak charuv beitar. Over, seems here, but there's some sort of covered wagon carriage beitar was destroyed. And now the Gemara goes into each one of these stories. Akamsa bar kamsa charuv Yerushalayim. Because of kamsa and bar kamsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Da'u gavra, derachme kamsa, ubal dvavei bar kamsa. This individual had a close friend, someone who he had a great relationship with, and his name was Kamsa. He also had someone who was an enemy, who was called Bar Kamsa. Avad Sudata, he made a great feast. He had a party of some sort, whether this was a wedding or whether this just a regular meal where he invited people over. Amarle Lisham A, he said to his servant, Zil Aitali Kamsa, please go invite Kamsa. Of course, his good friend, go and invite him. Azal Aitile Bar Kamsa. By accident, he brought him Bar Kamsa instead. You can obviously see why there could be a mix-up, because the names were so close that the servant got mixed up between the two families. Ata Ashkache Davayotiv. So the host shows up at the meal, and he sees that this guy is sitting at the meal. Amalei Michte, Hau Gavra Baldavavava, Hau Gavra, who, speaking the third person, this individual is the enemy of this individual being me himself, my boy Docha, what's he doing here? He doesn't belong here. Kum puk. He says to them, get up and get out. You don't belong here. You're not invited to this Sudam. Amalei, hoil vatai, shavkan. Since I already came, why don't you just leave me be? Viavina lecha, demei, ma dachilna b'shatina. And I'll pay you for whatever I ate and drank, I'll pay you. So Amalei, lo. He says, no, no go. I don't want to do that. Amalei, yavina lach, Demei, I'll go to Sudatech. I'll pay for half the meal if you just let me stay. Amarle lo. Says, no, go. Amarle, Yaivin, lecha, Demei, Kula Sudatech. I'll pay for the entire meal. Amarle lo. The host refuses to allow him to stay. Nakte biyode, v'ukme, v'afke. They grabbed him by his hands, pulled him up, and threw him out. Amar, ho, v'havu yatfe rabbonon. Since the rabbonon were present, v'lo machube, and they did not object to this behavior. You see from here that they were okay with what was going on, that they, in their silence, acquiesced to this type of behavior. So now, here you have a beginning of a story, which is going to lead to a long story here in the Gemara about the Churban HaBayit. But the first question one has to ask is, what is the Kamsa and Bar Kamsa is the way that this story is known. Over here, Kamsa was not a party to the story at all. Kamsa was just a mistake that was made. Yet the Rabbi Yochanan, when he states it, says, Kamsa ubar Kamsa charub Beit HaMikdash. Because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Kamsa is not in the story at all. So why are we blaming, or what did Kamsa do wrong here that he's also mentioned as the cause of the Churban HaBayit? So many explain simply that that is the mistake that was made. It was Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, and the closeness of their names is what led to the problem. So one nice explanation was that Kamsa was a part of the problem. The fact that there were these types of cliques or social groups where people liked each other and hated each other was symptomatic of the problem. The fact that Kamsa was a good friend of the host here and Bar Kamsa was not a good friend was a result of this type of behavior where people did not treat each other well, where there was sinat chinam, where there was not proper interactions between individuals. And therefore, Kamsa, in being a close friend of this individual, was a part of precipitating the problem of these differences between parties. The other thing that's interesting is that the host, who was the biggest of the problems here, is never mentioned. It could be for one of two reasons. One is that maybe it was an illustrious family, and therefore they didn't want to malign the family. Or it could be that, Zecher Tzadikim Livracha, Mishem Rishayim Yerkav, that the names of Rishayim should rot, that we try not to mention their names, because then that would give them a certain amount of Zecher here in the story. And so you could tell the story without their name, and therefore the Gemara does it without mentioning their name, so there is no Zecher to this family. Then we have here that the Rabbanon don't respond. Why don't the Rabbanon respond in this case? So the Marsha here claims that one of the reasons for the Churban HaBayit, well, we saw this in the Gemara in Sota, was Chanifa, was this idea of flattery, that the rich or the aristocratic class held so much power that the Rabbanon had to flatter them, were cowering before them, were subject to whatever they wanted. They couldn't respond, they couldn't stand up. They were afraid of losing their position, losing the fundraising, whatever the reason was. That's how the Marsha explains the lack of response from the Chachamim over here, because they maybe have felt that they didn't have the ability to respond in this case because of the nature of the structure of society. But you do see here, and this is an important concept, the Gemara mentions it in Avodah Zarah and many other places, they call anybody who has the ability to respond and to reject certain behaviors, and he doesn't, he's held accountable for that behavior. And over here, in some ways, the Rabbanon are implicated in the problem because they did not speak up. The Marsha, in their defense, is saying they couldn't speak up because of the nature of the relationships here. But there are two reasons to speak up in situations. One reason is to stop the other party from behaving in this manner. The other reason to do it is, even if you can't stop the other party, is to segregate yourself or differentiate yourself from that behavior. And to say that we do not collectively believe in that type of behavior. The silence is not acceptable here, even if the other person is not going to change their mind, because it looks like implicit acquiescence to the behavior of the other party, which is clearly how Bar Kamsa read it. So sometimes one has to speak up, not because you're going to stop the other party, but simply to say, I'm not a party to this, I will not accept this behavior, and you have to speak up in that manner, just to show that this behavior is not acceptable. Izel ichu behu kurza beimalko. So here, this is a terminology that's used in the Gemara to say malshin. He's going to go and implicate them with the government, malka or malchut. When it's used generically in the Gemara, it refers to the Romans, because they were the empire at the time. So it says, we're going to go to the Malka, means I'm going to go to Rome, and I'm going to bring bad tidings about the Jews to the Roman emperor and try to get them into trouble. Now, why it's expressed as ichu be kurza, it's not clear. I think Rashi mentions in other places that They used to do it around meals, and of course it was to wink. Yeah, these were manners of communication or ways that people conveyed messages, that they winked and they ate together, and therefore there was a certain amount of protocol in this manner of how you communicated information and what you did, and maybe that's what it's referencing here. Azal Amar Le the Kezar, Mardu Becha Yudai. What goes and says the Jews are rebelling. Amar Le Miyemar. How do you know they're rebelling? Give me some evidence of the fact that they're rebelling. Mle Shadar Le Kurbana. Why don't you send them a Kurban? Chazit im Mikarvin Le, if they are Makrivit. So let's see. You want to know if they really care about you? Send them a nice gift that they put on their Mizbeach and their Mikdash. And see if they put it on the Mizbeach. Azal Shadar Biyade Egla Tilta. They send with them an Egla Tilta, which is a nice fat cow. Tosfot over here says that it means Egla Mishuleshet V'ayil Mishulash, which are fat or good or healthy calf. He brings alternate explanations, which throughout Shas, Rashi brings down these different explanations in Shas, which is one is a Shlishi the Beten, the third one born to the mother. Others say that it's the 3 days old. Others say that it's one third of its maturity. And Tosfot over here rejects all of them. It just says that Iglatilta just means a really good, healthy, strong calf. So that he sends a beautiful gift. The Marsha over here again says that Iglatilta is a reference or a hint to the Cheta Egel, which is that the Egel's Chet is brought up. Anytime the Jews are punished, they throw in, Beyom Kaditi Etchem, on the day that I punish you, I also add in from the punishment the Egel, and that's the hint here in the Iglatilta. Or he brings down the other Midrash that Bnei Israel had on their backs, one Egel from the time of the Midbar, but they also had the Chet of Tumor Agalim in the time of Yeruvam. When Yeruvam puts out the two Agalim, instead of allowing the Jews to go up to Yerushalayim to worship, he sets up the Agalim in Beit El and in Dan. And therefore you have Iglatilta, you have the three Agalim, which are chasing Bnei Israel. So he speaks about that being a hint here. Bahadit Gaati, on his way, Shadabe Muma. This Bar Kamsa puts a blemish into the animal, but he does it in such a way, Benif Sfataim, he either cuts the lip, Varmila Bedokin Shiba'ayin, or others say that he put a cataract in the eye, which is almost impossible to do. Cataract in the eye is a natural growth that comes through the eye. I think that's why Rashi over here gives a slightly different explanation. And it's clear some of the other Rishonim mentioned the fact that he might have cut the eyelid rather than the normal translation of Dokin Shiba'ayin, which is a cataract, because it has to be something that he could do to the animal. In both these instances, it's Duchta Dili Dan Havamuma. For us, that would disqualify the animal from going on the Mizbeach. Uledidhu Lav Mumahu. But for them, it's not considered to be a mum. For Bnei Noach, in general, a mum is only mechutzar eiver, at least within our halacha. And generally for them too, they're not as makpid. It has to be missing some sort of limb in order to be classified as problematic to go on the Mizbeach. So he was smart enough to know that he could do something that would passel it to put on the Mizbeach for the Jews, but as far as the Goy was concerned, he wouldn't understand why they didn't put it on the Mizbeach. Marsha here again notes the reason that they picked Niv Sfataim and Dokin Shiba'ayin is also a hint at the sin of the generation by the Niv Sfataim on the lips because of their speech, their Lashon Hara, the behavior here in the Suda, and I guess in the Dokin Shiba'ayin is the Tzarei Ayin, those that were miserly, or here he was in welcoming of this individual, he was unwilling to let him stay at the Suda. So you see this as also being a reflection of the generation. Sever Abonon Lekruve. When it got to Yerushalayim, the Rabbanan just said, let's put it on the Mizbeach Mishum Shalom Malchut. It's worth it to override the din of problematic mumim on the Mizbeach, because otherwise the emperor is going to come after us. We may as well do it in order to keep peace with the emperor. Amarlo Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulas Yomru Bale Mumim Krevim Legabe Mizbeach. People are going to make a mistake and conclude from this that a Baal Mum could go on the Mizbeach. Not that in this instance, of course, in this instance it was allowed because of Shalom Malchut, but it would set a precedent or a paradigm by which people would think that this is no longer problematic to put on the Mizbeach. Savar the Miktale. So they came up with another conclusion, which is, let's kill Bar Kamsa so that he doesn't return to Leleza Balema. He won't go back and tell the emperor for what happened. Amalo Rabbi Zecharia. So Rabbi Zecharia again spoke up. Yomru. Matil mum b'kodeshim yareg. Then people are going to conclude that if you put a mum in kodeshim, the punishment is a death penalty, and people will come again to the wrong conclusion here. Amar Rabbi Yochanan anvantanuto shel Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulas. The humility of Rabbi Zechariah, Hechriva et Beitenu, destroyed our Mikdash, Vesarfet Hechalen, and burnt our dwelling, Iglitenu, Me Arzenu, and ended up putting us into exile. Now, it's an interesting comment by Rabbi Yochanan. What does it mean that Rabbi Zechariah's anuvah was the cause of the Churban? The Marsha and others describe that his inability to take a position over here was problematic. That he was afraid of what people might say. He was afraid of how people might conclude. And because of that humility and humbleness, he was unable to stake out a position and deal with the issue at hand. And that's what the criticism is over here, that sometimes you have to say that this is what we do despite the possibility or the risks that are involved, because there's a greater problem here that we have to deal with. And therefore we have to take a stand. His inability or unwillingness to take a stand caused the problem and caused the Churban HaBayit. That could be one criticism of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. Interesting enough, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas does not really appear in Shas. Appears, I think, one other time in Shas with regards to Halacha. This is one of the only times that he really appears in Shas. And it's really revolving around this issue of not giving Psak Halacha or not taking a stand. Obviously, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas held a position of power or was one of the leaders of the generation. Otherwise, he wouldn't have governed in this case. So that's implicit in the story here is that they were going to override him. They were going to listen to him. And again, he was seemed very reasonable. He was not unreasonable in his claim, but he didn't take into consideration the greater picture. And that sometimes maybe he didn't see the forest from the trees. That's really likely the criticism of Rabbi Yochanan, that he was so focused on the minutia of the halacha that he forgot that there was a bigger picture here. And that's what it means, his anava, his humility, his humbleness, that is just looking at a very, very small parochial view of what was going on caused him the problem over here. Then Shadar, so then they went back and told the Caesar at the time, who was Nero, and that's what it says, Shadar Levayun Le Neron Kesar. They went back to Nero, and Nero then sends the army to come. When Nero came to fight the Jews, this is probably around the year 66, that it happens is when the Jewish revolt begins, and Nero is the first Caesar during the Jewish revolt, and he sends troops to come. Over here, the Gemara describes Nero as coming to Eretz Yisrael. There's no other outside sources that corroborate that Nero ever came to Israel or was ever part of the battles there. He does send the army. He does send legions to fight, and they have a lot of difficulty, and they're actually defeated a number of times. The Jews are very successful at keeping the Romans out at that time. But there's no evidence that Nero himself went, even though the story here in the Gemara suggests that he did go there, which is Shadah Gira Lemisach. When he came to Yerushalayim, he shot an arrow to the east. Ata Nafal B'Yerushalayim. It went towards Yerushalayim. The Ma'arav, he shot it to the west, Ata Nafal B'Yerushalayim. And it went to the direction of Yerushalayim. The Arba Ruchot HaShamayim, he shot in every direction, Ata Nafal B'Yerushalayim. It went towards Yerushalayim, seeing that as a siman that he was going to conquer Yerushalayim. This was a common practice of generals or people in the army before they went into battle. They used to do these omens, signs, to see if they would be successful in the battle. This was one of those omens, and here the Gemara reads the omen is obviously coming out that it's going to be that he's going to take or conquer Yerushalayim. Amar lei Yanoka, it says to a child, Psokli Psukeich, tell me what Pasuk you're learning. So once again, this is used in the Gemara in many places, an indication of Nevuah. Remember the Gemara in Sota says that Pascha Nevuah Misrael, that Nevuah left Klal Yisrael, and now it's relegated to the children and the Shotim. So the Gemara sees when you say Psokli Psukeich, if you ask the child to tell me what Pasuk you're learning, they see that as a mini form of nivuah, as an indication as to what it means. So he quotes in the pasuk, "Amalei natati nikmati be'edom biyada mi Israel. I will take revenge on Edom through my people Israel." So Amar akudjabrichu. So he's very smart, Nero. He says, "You know what God wants? Ba'ila charuve beite. He wants to destroy his mikdash. Uva'ila chupuri biyadei ba'ugavra. And he wants to wipe his hands clean on this individual." Kapara Chapure Yadei, Rashi brings in the Gemara in Zvachim with regards to the Pasuk in Ezra that says Kaparot Zahav. He says, why are they called Kaparot Zahav? Because the Kohanim, after they took the blood for them, they used to wipe their fingers on the edge of the utensils. And that's why they were called Kapure Zahav. So here it means the Chapure Yadei means to wipe his hands clean. I mean, God wants me to destroy the Mikdash and then basically blame me for that and then take revenge on me. So he's trying to do something, and I'm going to be the fall guy for his wanting to destroy the Mikdash. Arak, he ran away. Vazal v'gayer, he converted. V'nafak minei Rabbi Meir. And out of him came Rabbi Meir. Now, what is interesting here is that, again, in the corroboration of the story, the Marsha himself mentions it over here. And again, I mentioned this in the past. It's amazing here how well-versed the Mefarshim were with Josephus. The Marsha himself quotes Josephus in this case, as well as a lot of the Rishonim quote Josephus in corroboration or in discussing these Gemara. The Marsha notes that, oh, in Josephus, it says that Nero did commit suicide or he ran away, which is true. Nero, after losing popularity with the people, runs out of Rome or outside Rome and then kills himself, commits suicide, which leads to a tumultuous time in Rome, but he does leave and commit suicide. The remainder of the story about him converting and Rabbi Meir being a descendant of his, there we don't have any, again, any outside corroboration of it. It's interesting that his last wife, Nero's last wife, is mentioned in Josephus as being a very religious woman. Because there was a delegation, and I spoke about this in the Gemara in Pesachim, that went up to Yerushalayim to get permission to build a wall by the Mikdash to block the king's view into the Mikdash. And there was an altercation between the Kohanim and the king at the time, Agrippus. And they go to Rome to petition the emperor eventually. There were 10 people sent, amongst them Ishmael ben Faiki, or Fabi, who was the Kohen Gadol. They agree, in the end, the Nero emperor agrees on behalf of his wife, his religious woman, who petitions him religiously to allow them to do this, and he sends them back, but he only sends 8 of them back. He keeps 2 of those individuals and gives them over to his wife, which are the Kohen Gadol and the treasurer of the Mikdash, who are mentioned in Josephus, and are left with his wife. Because, again, she was fond of religion and religious individuals, so he gives them to her as servants. Nobody says what happens in the story. It's interesting because in the end, what seemingly was maybe difficult for them turned out probably to save their lives because Yerushalayim will be destroyed a couple of years later. But they're left incarcerated in Rome. And that might lead to some of this, what the Gemara is saying over here. This idea that he had a religious bent to him, might not have been him, might have been his wife, that makes them believe that he was mitgayer, that he converted. His wife or his final wife is the only one who survives actually his emperorship, and actually she lives afterwards. There were plenty of murders of wives and mistresses and so on and so forth in Rome between all of these emperors. Meantime, she is able to survive through the loss of Nero and the rise of Vespasian, which is interesting and again might lead to or be the explanation for some of this story here. So the part of the story is that he did run away and commit suicide. So that part of the story is definitely true and corroborated. The rest of it, we don't have any other outside evidence to this fact. Shadre Yelavayu Lasphanios Caesar. So then they send Vespasian. So now, Ata Tsar Allah Tzlat Shoni. He came and he laid siege to Yerushalayim for 3 years. That is true. The original individual was sent to quell the Jewish revolt, fails. Vespasian is called up to do this. Vespasian was successful in the north of Rome by Britain. He fought the battles of Britain for Rome and conquered a large areas of Britain and the northern parts of the Roman Empire. And now he's sent over to quell the Jewish revolt in Israel. This is while Nero is still alive. He's sent over there. And Vespasian comes to Israel and is successful at conquering large parts of the northern part of Israel until he finally now gets to Yerushalayim where he has difficulty and lays his siege for 3 years to Yerushalayim. He is met there by his son who is fighting on the eastern side. His son is Titus, who later on will take over the battle on behalf of his father Vespasian when Vespasian becomes the Caesar. Over here he's called Vespasian Caesar. He's not yet the Caesar because Nero is the Caesar at the time. Havabu Hanu Tzlate Atire. Inside of Yerushalayim there were 3 wealthy individuals. Nakdimon ben Gurion, uben Kalba Savua, uben Tzitzita Keset. These 3 individuals are mentioned in other places in Shas. Nakdimon ben Gurion, Shnakdalo Achama Bavuro. Nakdimon ben Gurion because his name was really bony, as the Gemara tells us in other places. But he's called Nakdimon ben Gurion, Shnakdalo Achama. The son stood for him or came out for him. That's a story that's mentioned in the Gemara in Ta'anit, where he basically pledged to an individual all of his money or extreme amounts of money if he did not replace the water that they borrowed for the Ole Regalim. The Ole Regalim had come up to Yerushalayim. There was no water available. So he basically asked this individual to give the water and he'll replace it. And sure enough, there's no rain, no rain. And then finally the rain comes on the last day that he owes the money. But the sun is already set on that day. So the individual says, it's all nice and good, but you missed the deadline, and you're going to have to pay me the money. It doesn't matter that the water came. So then, Nachdim Ben Gurion davens to Hashem and says, I didn't do this for my own kavod, I did it for the kavod of Bnei Israel. And sure enough, the clouds peel away, and the sun is shining bright. And so that's when Nachdama lo achama, that the chama came out, or shone for him, to save him from that payment. And the person who's supposed to get paid says, I know that the sun isn't supposed to be here, and it's only because of you that the sun is out. He acknowledges it, but in the end, he can't make the claim against Nachdimon ben Gurion, and that's why he was known by this name. Ben Kalba Sabua is named this way. Shekol nichnas lebeito kashu ra'ev kekelev. Anybody enters his house starving like a dog, he'll say kashu sava, leaves satisfied and full. So here you're speaking about another individual who did tremendous masim tovim. He did hanachadnasat orchim. That's what the Marsha points out here, that these rich individuals weren't simply wealthy. They were wealthy and people who did masim tovim. And these are people who carry with them a tremendous amount of weight, not just because of their wealth, but because of the masim tovim they did. And despite that, they were not able to save Yerushalayim. So that tells you how bad the situation in Yerushalayim was. Despite these individuals, they were unable to save the city. Ben tzitzit akeset, shaita tzitzato, nigreret al gabei il kisatot, or karim vikisatot, that his tzitzit used to roll on the ground on top of pillows and blankets. Whether this means that he was very makpid on the mitzvah of tzitzit, or the Gemara might discuss this in other places, that he used to put out silk and fine wool to walk on, something that was like a red carpet in that manner because he was so wealthy, but he used to leave it behind for the poor people to take. And that was the godless of what he did. He wasn't doing it, I mean, he did it part of his standing or aristocratic class, but he did it in such a way that it fed the poor and took care of all the other individuals because he would leave it behind. Ikadamri, some say Shaita Kisato Mutele Ben Gdole Romi. Others say that his chair, his throne was amongst those of Rome, that he held tremendous political sway, and he could have convinced the Romans to back off. Chadamar Luhu, Ana Zainalu Bechite Visari. One of them said, look, I'll provide wheat and barley for the whole city. Chadamar Luhu Bedechamar Bemilchob Mishcha. I'll provide wine, salt, and oil. I'll provide the firewood. I'll provide the wood for them. The Rabbanan gave the most praise to the one who said, I'll provide the firewood. To Rav Chista, because we know about Rav Chista, kol aklidei avamaso l'shamei. All of the keys he would give over to his servant. With the exception of the one to the woodshed. Dam Rav Chista, akalba dechite by shitin akalbe detzive. On one silo, or one storehouse worth of wheat, you need 60 storehouses of wood. And that wood is the more difficult raw material that you need. First of all, for the limited resource here, we know that in Israel, that wood is a limited resource. But on top of that, because you need to light a fire anytime you want to do something, and a fire consumes the wood. So therefore, you need a lot of wood in order to process the same amount, equivalent silo worth of wheat. They had sufficient stores within Yerushalayim to hold out against the siege for 21 years. So here again, Vespasian is there for 3 years and is slowly wearing the city down, but they have sufficient supplies to last for 21 years. And for that reason, they feel like they don't have to give in to the Romans. Havuhanu Bar Yonai. There were these Bar Yonai, which we'll call them zealots loosely. The Gemara has a very, very negative view of these Bar Yonai. And they're the ones who eventually also end up at Masada, which is interesting today because the view of those that were at Masada is much more positive today. Gemara has a very negative view of them here, and probably in relationship to Masada, the same individuals, these Bar Yonai, who were these zealots that caused a lot of problems because of their behavior, which is that they're unwilling to sue for peace with the Romans because they feel that it's a religious imperative not to subjugate oneself to Rome. That was their basic feeling. And therefore, they were unwilling to surrender. You can look in Josephus himself, when he writes about the Churban of Yerushalayim, that they gave them a number of chances to sue for peace. And every time they reject this suing for peace, even when the Romans had already conquered the Mikdash and the lower city of Yerushalayim, and they're moving towards the upper city where everybody now was holed up to escape from the Romans, they are negotiating with them to sue for peace. And on the bridge that leads between the lower city and the upper city. And once again, they reject that, which leads to the utter destruction of Upper Yerushalayim as well as massive killings by the Roman army of the people in Yerushalayim. Because, again, they refused to give in or subjugate themselves to the Romans, they saw that as being religiously improper to give in to the Romans. And for that reason, they stand up but cause huge amount of problems and death to the civilians and to the people in the area. And here you see the Rabbanan say, let us go out, hold out a white flag, and sue for peace, which is offered numerous times by Vespasian, at least according to Josephus, that Vespasian offers the people of the city to be spared if they just surrender to his army. So there were offers of peace that are made and are rejected over and over again by the Bar Yonai that are in the city, their refusal to sue for peace, and leads to a situation which we're going to see here. Lo Shavkinu, the Bar Yonai did not allow the Rabbanan to sue for peace. Amalu, Nefuk V'Navid Krava Ba'adayu. Let us go to war. We want to battle them. We're either going to die or we're going to battle them. That was their basic motto, which is either death or freedom. We're not subjugating ourselves to the Romans. Amrlo the Rabbanan, lo mistayim milta. That it's not going to work. You're not going to be successful in battle. They had this, whether it's a premonition, Ruach HaKodesh, that this was not going to work out. So kamo kalunhu lahanu ambre dechite visare. So what they do is they burn all the stores inside of Yerushalayim. And then it leads to a huge famine. They burn the stores in order to force the people not to be so complacent. And therefore there was a famine because of the siege in Yerushalayim. Josephus tells stories, as well as the Gemara, of the terrible famine and what was going on inside of Yerushalayim and how difficult the situation was. The Midrashim and Eicha and the story of Eicha about the famine in the city was terrible. Here the Gemara says it was precipitated by the Bar Yonai because they wanted to force the hand of the people in the city, that they shouldn't be so passive and so complacent because they had stores and therefore they didn't need to fight. They wanted to force their hand to fight, so they burned down the stores. Again, how much of a corroboration we have of these is not so clear, but the Rabbanan clearly believe that that's what caused the problem or the famine within the city were these Bar Yonai. We're going to see them again. Josephus describes, and we'll see it again in the story in a minute, that the Bar Yonai would not allow anybody to leave the city. If you left the city to go and surrender to the Romans, they would kill you on the way out. So for people to escape the city was extremely dangerous because you'd be killed by the Yonai. And then Josephus describes that when you ended up by the Romans, it wasn't so safe either. Vespasian at some point promises anybody who leaves the city will be given safety and taken care of and be sent to another city and live safely and would not be hurt. Unfortunately, as Josephus describes it there, the troops aren't as compliant with that because they figured out that people were coming out of Yerushalayim with wealth. That when they escaped from Yerushalayim, they took money or they took something with them so that they could survive. Now, they couldn't take it in their hands because they would be caught by the Bar Yonai and everybody would know it as soon as they got out there. So they were swallowing the gold coins or they were swallowing things. So what ended up happening is when they came out, the people laying siege to there would take them and they would kill them or cut open their stomachs to get to the gold or silver that they had. So Vespasian, according to Josephus, puts in a decree which says that you're no longer allowed to touch anybody who leaves the city, and anybody's caught killing a Jew that escapes from the city will be put to death. Now that might relate to the Gemara at the end of yesterday's daf or the three different gezeirot. There are never any clear three gezeirot that are mentioned in the historical annals. Some just say it was periods of time. Immediately after the Churban, the Romans ran rampage and killed everybody in sight because there was such animosity between the Romans and the Jews. The Jews really put up a battle that they had nowhere else in the empire. It went on from 66 to 69, 70 for 4 years. It left decimated a lot of Roman legions. And therefore, there was a huge amount of animosity and the Romans just killed everybody. And that's written in Josephus when they entered into Yerushalayim. They just kill randomly, no matter who's there. Just there's so much anger and so much hate about this for the number of troops and people that were lost outside of Yerushalayim, laying siege to Yerushalayim. So that might be just a natural progression, which is at first that hatred just leads to killing everybody, and then slowly it changes over time. Or it might refer to these rules of Vespasian that are mentioned in Josephus, that he changed the rules as far as how they treated the people who escaped from Yerushalayim. And Vespasian at one point has to intercede on behalf of the people escaping from Yerushalayim because of this problem, which is that people aren't going to believe that you have safe escape if you get killed. And then people aren't going to come out. You're defeating the purpose of asking the people to leave the city if you're going to kill them when they leave the city. So that might be what that referred to as well. Martha Bat Baitus Atirata de Yerushalayim was one of the wealthiest women in Yerushalayim, Avya. Now, Martha Bat Baitus is mentioned in the Gemara in Yoma for her tremendous wealth. Her first husband had passed away, and she ends up marrying Yeshua Ben Gamla, who she basically pays off Yanai HaMelech, in order to make him the Kohen Gadol. The problem with that is obviously the discrepancy the Maharsha points it out in timing, which is that if it references Yanai Melech was long before the Churban HaBayit. And this story is mentioned about the Churban HaBayit, which would indicate that it's not the same Marta Bat Baitus, but rather a different Marta Bat Baitus. Or you have to say that that story over there about Marta Bat Baitus wasn't about Yanai Melech, when they got the kings mixed up. And it was really about not Yanai, but a descendant of Yanai HaMelech. And that's what it's referring to. Whether it's the same one or not, seems likely that it is the same woman because it describes her as being extremely wealthy and particular. Havi Shadarta Lishlucha, she sent out her messenger, probably a slave. Vamrale Zil Aitali Smida. Go bring me the finest flour so I can have some bread. Adazal Izdabun. By the time he got there, it was sold out. Atamrala Smida Leka Hibarta Ika. There's no more fine flour, but there's still white flour left. Would you like me to get that? Amrale Zil Aitali. Go get that. Go buy it. Adazel is Dabin. By the time he got there, it was all sold out. Atav Amarla, Chivarta Leka, Gushkara Ika. There's no longer any white flour. There is still some whole wheat flour left. Rashi calls it Pat Kibar. Amrale Zil Aitali. She says, go get it for me. Adazel is Dabin. Again, once he goes there, it's all sold out. Atav Amarla, Gushkara Leka, Kimcha Desara Ika. There's no longer even any whole wheat left. There's only barley flour left. Amrale, she says, Tim Zil Aitali. Go get it for me. Adazel is Dabon. When he got there again, it was sold out again. Hava Shlifa Masa'ano. She slipped off her shoes. She was going out. Amra Ipuk Vachze. I'll go out myself. Yeshkachna Mide de Mecha. Find something to eat. Etivla Parta Bikara. She stepped on some dung with her foot. Umeita. And died. Kariyala Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Haraka Becha Vanuga. Eshadon Ista Kafragla. That the soft ones and enjoy the pleasures of life. Someone who was very particular, was soft, and couldn't handle anything that was untoward. Here she steps in the dung and dies, and he ascribes this pasuk in Dvarim, in the Tochacha, to be referencing to Marta Bat Baitus dying from just stepping out into the world, where she wasn't used to being involved or having to deal with these types of difficulties, quote-unquote, and she dies from that. Ika Damre, Grugorot to Rab Tzadok Achla, some say that she ate one of the leftover figs of Rabbi Tzadok, Vitnisa Umeita. And she was an Istanis. She was so particular that when she smelt the sickness of Rabbi Tzadok, who's going to be mentioned later again in the Gemara again, Meita, she died from this. Why? The Rabbi Tzadok, Yotiv Arayin Shnin Betanita. Rabbi Tzadok fasted for 40 years before the Churban HaBayit. Tolo Lecharev Yushalayim, that Yushalayim should not be destroyed. Ki Av Ochel Midei Avi Mitchazei Me'evrai. He had lost so much weight. And that he was so bare-bone from all these fasts that when he used to eat something, you could see on the outside, when he swallowed it, you could see it going down his body. When he was trying to get healthy again and trying to regain his strength, they used to bring him these figs. He used to suck out their juices, bite into them, suck out their juices, and then throw them. So that was the leftover fig that she picked up. So when she was on her deathbed or dying, she throws all her gold and silver out into the street. Shadita Bashuka, Amra Hailamai, Mibayali, what do I need this for? It's not getting, I have all this money and I can't buy any food. There's no food to be had in order to buy. So again, this idea that part of the Tuchaz are going to throw their money into the streets because, again, money's only useful when there's something to buy with the money. Now she has all this gold and silver and there's nothing to buy. There's no food inside of Yerushalayim. And again, there are horrible, horrible stories told by Josephus about the famine in Yerushalayim and stories of the famine. Interesting enough, because he's on the outside, he's not on the inside, but obviously this is probably from people after the fact telling the stories or trying to describe the difficulties in Yerushalayim, but the famine is extreme in Yerushalayim to the point, again, where these Bar Yonim are running around from house to house. If they smelt the fire or food in any house, they would kill everybody there and take the food. I mean, that this is that description the Chachamim talk about Sinat Chinam and the infighting. There are a large number of these militias that are running around. The militias are both fighting the Romans and themselves at the same time and killing amongst themselves and to determine who's going to assert leadership, who's going to control Yerushalayim. And this is even during the siege of the Romans on Yerushalayim, there's this fighting going on inside the city of Yerushalayim. So you can understand what the Chachamim are talking about. Sinat Chinam here. There's this tremendous, tremendous amount of animosity between Jews killing between Jews, and these Bayunai are especially problematic in this area because they're killing anybody who disagrees with them. Again, they're trying to assert control through their killing of other people or rival gangs, militias inside of Yerushalayim. And Josephus describes the different leaders of these gangs, which we'll see one of them in a minute, as well as what happened to them. Actually, two of them escaped from Yerushalayim. And Vespasian, because he promised people who left Yerushalayim that they would give in safe corridor out, he has to abide by his word and gives two of these leaders safety or safe passage, despite the fact that they're clearly two of the leaders of some of these rival militias inside of Yerushalayim. Abba Sikra Reish Baryunai Yerushalayim. Abba Sikra was the head of the Baryunim of Yerushalayim. Barachte de Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Abba. He was the nephew of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which becomes important in this story. Abba Sikra. Sikra is probably from the word Sikari. Sikari means a sword, or those that live by the sword. Abba Sikari would be the father, but or the leader of the Sikari, which was the name given to some of these Baryunim, which would make sense that he is the head of the Sikari. He was, again, a nephew of Rabbi Yochanan. Sholach lei tabitzin ala gabai. Supposedly, the way the Gemara tells the story is that this head of the Baryunim, Abba Sikra, Rabbi Yochanan, sends to him to come to me privately. At amalei adamat abditu hachi, v'kadlidu lei la'alma b'kafna. How long are you guys going to hold out like this and have the whole world die by famine over here? Amalei ma'yavit. So Abba Sikra says to Rabbi Yochanan, what do you want me to do? Diaminu lehu midei katlubi. So if I tell them anything, they're going to kill me. Meaning that even the head of the Sikari cannot control his own people because they basically have this mentality that anybody who's unwilling to resist the Romans is considered to be a traitor. So if you change your mind and decide, let's sue for peace, they're going to kill me. I have no control over them. So says, come up with a plan that'll get me out of the city. That's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says. I'll go out. At least maybe I can save some of the city. So Abba Sikra tells him, pretend you are sick on your deathbed. And everybody should come and pay their last respects to you because you're ill. You should take something rotted, and then put it next to you. Meaning that they'll put some sort of nevela, rotten meat there that will start to smell because that will be an indication when the person passes away, their body starts to decompose. And that'll be a sign of the decomposition of the body, which will grant and give you a right that they want to take you out of the city. Let them say that you passed away. And only your students should carry you. Nobody else should carry the coffin, the bed. So they won't realize that you're light. That they know that a live person is always lighter than a dead person. So if other people get involved, they'll know that Rabbi Yochanan is really not dead. So they do it in a way that only his students will do it. And we have precedent for that by Yaakov Avinu, where he says, only my sons will carry my coffin. So there is precedent for that. And they could say, look, only my students, nobody else is going to touch the coffin. But that's how they're going to carry him out. So Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua came in to carry the mitah. We know that from the Mishnah Avot, Chamisha Talmidim Ayudo, the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Eliezer ben Urkonos, and Rabbi Yeshua are mentioned, or two of the students that are mentioned there in the Mishnah Avot. Kimatu the pitcha. So they came to the doorway. Bow the mikdere. The Sikari or the Zealots, the Baryunai that are there, want to stab through the coffin of the bed to make sure that he's dead. They know that people are trying to sneak out of the city, and they're sneaking people out of the city in coffins. And people are trying to get out of the city any way they can, because they think that's their only chance to survive here. So the Baryunai, in order to prevent that, are checking anyone who's leaving the city, and they want to make sure that whoever's in here is dead. They're going to put a sword through it. Amalo Yomru Rabban Dakru. They're going to say, the Romans are going to say, these people don't even have respect for their own Rebbeim, their Rabbanan, that they stab him. So Baal the Midchafe, they wanted to toss him out. I mean, they wanted to throw the coffin out or jettison it out of the city. Amalo Yomru Rabban Dachafu. They're going to say that they're robbed. They jettisoned out of the city. Patkule Bava Nofak. They open up the gates and let him out. By the skin of their teeth, they get out with Rabbi Yochanan intact and alive. Kimata Lahatam. So then they come to the sieging troops of Yerushalayim. Shlama Alecha Malka. Shlama Alecha Malka. Peace be to you, the king. Peace be to you, the king. Again, that's the normal way that you would address the king, which is that you would say peace to you. Amalei Michaivit Trei Katala. You're Chayav Mita twice. Chada Delav Malka Ana. First of all, I'm not the Caesar. But Kakaritli Malko. And you're calling me the Caesar. So that could be for one of two reasons. Either because he thinks he's poking fun of at him, calling him the Malka, or it really is a Morid B'Malchut because he's calling him the king or the emperor when there's another emperor. And therefore it's a slight to the real emperor, and that's why he's deserving a death. Similar thing happens with Uriah Chiti when he comes back from the battle and is sleeping in Yerushalayim, and David tells him to go home to his wife, and he says, how can I do that when my Adon Yoav is out in the field? So he calls Yoav his master in front of David, who is the king. The Gemara sees that as a slight to David HaMelech, by Mori B'Malchut, that he's calling someone else the master in front of the king. And if I am the king, where have you been until now? And if I am the emperor, you should have been out here negotiating with me and dealing with this problem. The fact that you say that I'm not the emperor, Ivra Malkat, for sure you are the emperor. If not, Yerushalayim will not be turned over to you. Which is interesting. Tosafot right away asked the question, Vespasian never conquers Yerushalayim. Vespasian leaves for Rome before he ever conquers Yerushalayim. And what is Rabbi Yochanan saying over here? So Tosafot says, Kevin to Kvar Tzara Le'ashloshanim. He already had laid siege for 3 years. Vava Kafna Vakilu Kvar Nimsara. Rabbi Yochanan is already acknowledging that Yerushalayim is finished. Because the famine was so great at that time, it was just a matter of time now when Yerushalayim was going to falter or going to have to give in because the famine was so great and the people inside were dying. And again, the Romans had plenty of time. They were building on the ramparts, trying to get into Yerushalayim, break through the walls, and they were going to be more and more successful as the people inside are dwindling and diminished by the famine as well as their inability to fight because of the famine. That the Livanon will fall to the one who is great. So now Livanon is referring to Yerushalayim, we'll see in a second. And Adir means one who's great. Vein Adir el Melech. And Adir, or the great one, the glorious one, is a king. Dichtiv v'aya Adiro mimenu. Because they quote the pasuk near Miyo, that references to the king, Adiro mimenu. And then, Vein Livanon el Beit HaMikdash, Nemar Har HaTov HaZeh v'aLivanon, which Moshe Rabbeinu is desiring to go into Eretz Yisrael to see the building of the Mikdash and to see Yerushalayim. And therefore, the reference there, Vav Levanon, is a reference to the Mikdash itself. The Har HaTov is Har HaMoriah, and Levanon is the Mikdash. Two reasons that are brought for that. Levanon is either because the Arzei HaLevanon were used to build the Mikdash, or Levanon from the word Levan, that it is Malbin. It cleanses the sins of Bnei Yisrael. That's why it's referred to as Levanon. That's how he answers the first question about why he called him an emperor. Udikamart, Imalkana, Amai Loka Ati Legabai. So you said the other question, if I am the emperor, why didn't you come until now? So he explains that there's a problem in the city, that these zealots are not letting anybody out, and that they are causing problems. In essence, what Rabbi Yochanan is trying to do is explain to Vespasian that we have a problem. We have a majority of people in the city who really want to sue for peace, and you have the Bar Yunai who are unwilling to sue for peace, but they're running the show. They're killing anybody who won't listen. And therefore, they're running the show. And he's trying to get salvation for the city to say, you got to get the people who are causing the problem and not the whole city. So that at least maybe you can spare the people of the city. If there is a barrel of honey and there's a serpent wrapped around it, wouldn't you smash the barrel in order to get rid of the snake or the serpent? Now, probably to kill the serpent, you would smash the barrel. It's worth smashing the barrel to get rid of the serpent. So the same thing here. We have to take on the Bar Yonai, and it's worth doing whatever you have to do to kill the Bar Yonai. So Ishtik, Rabbi Yochanan had no response to him. Karyalei Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef says about Rabbi Yochanan, V'item Rabbi Akiva, Meshiv Chachamim Achor V'adam Isakel, that Hashem pulls back the wisdom of those that are wise, V'adam Isakel, and he makes their knowledge foolish, meaning that he didn't have any answer, that Hashem silenced Rabbi Yochanan at this point. The way the Marshal describes it is because of the people of the city. The people of Yerushalayim didn't have enough zchuyot that Rabbi Yochanan should be able to answer them. And that's why it happened. I'll give you a possible alternate explanation over here. Ibaile the Meimerle, he should have said to them, Shaklin and Savto, Shaklin and Le the Darkon, Bekatlin and Le, Bechavita Shavkin and La. You don't break the barrel to kill the snake. But rather, what you do is you take tongs and you pull the serpent off of the barrel. So the same thing over here. You should kill the Bar Yonai and leave the barrel intact. You should leave Yerushalayim and the remainder of the people in Yerushalayim intact. So now, we're going to see in a second that Rabbi Yochanan does not make this request, or he doesn't ask for this, and we're going to have to see why that Rabbi Yochanan does it. That time, a messenger comes from Rome. Amalei kum demitle kezar. Come, because the kezar has died. V'amru hani chashiri derome lo tivach v'resha. And the heads of Rome want to put you in or install you as the emperor. This part of the story is interesting because it's not direct. After the death of Nero, Nero commits suicide. It's what's known in the history as the year of the four emperors. Because Nero commits suicide at the beginning of the year. And then there are two other emperors that try to take hold. They were rival groups or rival generals that were trying to take hold and become the emperors. One of them was Otho. One of them was, I think, Galba. And Otho kills Galba, and then Otho goes in, and then he's killed or dies very shortly afterwards. And then now, there was another competition again to be installed as the emperor, and there's Vitellius and Vespasian who are left. Vitellius goes to Rome in order to become the emperor. At that time, the troops of Vespasian, where he ruled over here in this area, as well as in Egypt, where he was beforehand, and then up in the north, he makes an alliance with the general in the Syrian area. They all declare Vespasian to be the emperor. So he's declared the emperor in June of that year, yet he's only appointed in Rome as the emperor in December. And that's because it takes time to sort this all out. For that reason, Vespasian leaves over here, leaves the battle. He goes to Egypt to deal and to gather support in Egypt. And then he has a friend or the alliance that he has up in the north who go to battle with Vitellius' army from Rome, and eventually are successful at killing him and then installing Vespasian eventually by the Roman Senate as the emperor. So that's why it's known as the year of the four emperors. So it's not a direct line where Nero dies and then Vespasian becomes the emperor, but rather this is all this that happens along the way. And the messenger coming is saying, I don't know if it's necessarily from Rome that they want to appoint you, but it takes a long time before Rome acknowledges. So he's only installed in Rome in December, although Vespasian himself counts his reign from June, because that's when his troops and his army that was loyal to him appointed him and acknowledged him as the emperor. So now this messenger, whether this is after, later in the story, or this is early in the story, it's not clear, but it's part of all that's going on at this time, and that's why Vespasian leaves the area to his son, Titus, his oldest son, to take over as the general. So he was tying one of his shoes, Baye lemisaima achrino. And then he wanted to put on the other shoe. I mean, he had one shoe on, and he was trying to put on the other shoe. Lo ayo. It didn't go on. Baye lemishlefele idach. He wanted to take the other one off. Lo nofik. He couldn't get it off because his feet had swollen. Vespasian is putting on. He had one shoe on, one shoe off. He couldn't get the other one on. He couldn't get his other boot on. So now he's worried about the fact that he's sick or he's ill because his feet have swollen. My high. Says Rabbi Yochanan, what's going on here? So now he calls Rabbi Yochanan and asks, so wise, what's going on over here? Amalei lo titzdair shmua tova achilecha. Says, don't be worried. You definitely got some good news. And that's why you're having a problem over here. Dichtiv shmua tova tidashen etzem. And good news causes the body to swell. So elo maita kantei. So he says, what should I do? How do I solve the problem? Says, leite inishlo mitve datach mine. Bring someone you don't like in front of you. Vilichlev kamach. And he'll walk in front of you. Dichtiv veruach nekaa tiyavei shkarem. A despondent spirit causes the bones to dry out or shrink, meaning that the swelling will go down when somebody who you don't like comes in front of you. So Abed Al-Khidr did this, ayo, and his other boot went on, Vespasian was able to put on his other boot. Amaleo machardach mitu kulei hai. If you're so wise, adeidna mailo atate legabai. How come you didn't get out here earlier? If you're so wise, you should have been able to get out here to sue for peace earlier. Amalei below amri locha. Didn't I already tell you what the problem was with the Bayonai? Amalei, ana nami amri locha. I also told you the mashal with the snake and the honey. So Amalei, meza zilna, he says, I'm going. Vina shachrina mishadrana. I'm going to send someone else. He doesn't send someone else. Titus is already there. Already part of the army that is laying siege to Yerushalayim, but he takes over for his father. Elabaminai mide de eten lecha. Basically, give me your three wishes, and I'll give it to you before I leave because of the fact that you came out to sue for peace, and you helped me out in this situation. Amalei, tenli yavna v'chachamea. Give me Yavna and its chachamim. It seems to be already that Yavna was established as a major place of learning. The chachamim had wind of the fact that the Mikdash is going to be destroyed. The Gemara is in many places talking about 40 years as being the span of time before the Churban HaBayit, where they assumed the Bayit was going to be destroyed. And the Sanhedrin moved out of Yerushalayim, moved out of the Mikdash, out of Yerushalayim, and then to Yavne. The Shoshalit and Rabban Gamliel. He wants you to save the line or dynasty of Rabban Gamliel, which is the Davidic line. And those are the Nisi'im in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Shimon, Rabban Gamliel, and later on Hillel. These are the Nisi'im of Eretz Yisrael. Vasvata de Masanya later Rabbi Tzadok. And a doctor to cure Rabbi Tzadok. Karlei Rabbi Yosef, Itema Rabbi Akiva. So again, the same refrain that we saw before from Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Akiva, Meshov Chachamim Achor B'datam Yisakel. But again, here, he didn't make the right request. They should have asked them to leave us this time. Give us one more chance. Let us be, and you should go away. Give us another chance. Says, if he asks for something too big, he's not going to grant it. So he'd rather ask for something small, which he knows for sure he will get. On this, I will say a number of things. One is that it's not clear that Rabbi Yochanan's made a mistake in his answer. Rabbi Yochanan knows what's going on with the Bar Yonai, and he knows it's just a matter of time before the Romans will be back here, because these Bar Yonai are not going to acquiesce or give up to Roman rule here. So even if he asks them to go away, it's just a matter of time before they're back, and this whole story is going to play out again. So asking for them to leave may not have been a great solution to the problem, because all it does is defer the inevitable rather than dealing with the problem at hand. So therefore, he has the foresight to realize that they need to protect Torah. And that's what Tein Li Yavna V'Chachameah is, that he has to create a situation in which there will be a survival of the people post-Churban HaBayit and post-Churban Yerushalayim. And that's what he's very focused on. That's number one. Number two is that Rabbi Yochanan might have had in mind to allow for the Churban HaBayit. Now, that seems dramatic or crazy. How would he allow for the Churban HaBayit? You have to remember that Chazal's view already, the Bayit is an empty place. It becomes a social center, a JCC. It's no longer the Bayit or the temple because of the corruption and the problems that are going on inside of the Mikdash. And therefore, they see the Bayit as a bricks and mortar now, no longer the dwelling place of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Kadosh. That's what the Gemara in other places talks about, the Churban HaBayit. Was that Hashem took out his anger on the Eitzim Ba'avanim, that it was no longer the holy place because the Shekhinah had already left that location. So that's number one. Number two is that the Tzdukim hold huge power and huge sway in the Mikdash, and that has a lot to do with the Kohanim. The Kohanim, or many of the Kohanim, were Tzdukim, and that has to do with the fact that the Tzdukim and the Kohanim were this aristocratic class, and they felt that they were different than the regular people, and they did not accept the Prushim, or the Chachamim. Rabbi Yochanan, by allowing for the Churban HaBayit, shifts the power dramatically from the Tzdukim and the Kohanim over to the Rabbanim, to the Prushim. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan might have had in mind that the Churban HaBayit would cause this shift in power back to the Prushim, which is very important, because at this point, between the corruption, the Tzdukim, Torah Shebaal Peh and the Chachamim are going to be lost to the cause. The Beit HaMikdash stayed intact. And therefore, he sees a value in allowing the Mikdash to be destroyed here. Again, not in a selfish way, but for the survival of Klal Yisrael. The Bayit, again, is not functioning as a religious center anymore. It's a social center. It's corrupt. There's problems. There's a tremendous amount of issues with the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, he sees that the Churban HaBayit might lead to a better outcome for the long-term survival of the Jews, which is a shift of the power back to the Prushim and the Torah Shebaal Peh, and the ability to survive. Number two is, with regards to the killing of the Shoshelet of Rabban Gamliel, it's very interesting. There, at the time of the Churban, there are huge rumors going around Eretz Yisrael that Mashiach is going to be born with the Churban HaBayit. And it seems to me this is not an uncommon midrash, we'll call it, that is floating around. And therefore, there are groups, these Bayonim, and groups of people running around talking about a Mashiach that's born, or that they are going to lead the group of this messianic revolution that's going to get rid of the Romans. And born out of this group, or these groups, are many other religions that come out. Some of them survive, some of them do not survive out of this era with the Romans. And Christianity is born out of this time period as well. This idea that this is a messianic era, and that's very much a thought within Judaism, that at the pinnacle of destruction, something survives. There's a spark of Kedushah that survives and allows for the continuum. And that's the same thing. Like in the Churban of Sodom v'Amorah, we see that the surviving people become the beginning of the Davidic line. And that through every time of destruction, there's this spark or little thing that gets created at that moment that allows for the revitalization or the survival of the people. And so over here, that was the view of the people at the time. Josephus writes this, and many others write about this. Josephus declares Vespasian as the messianic ruler of the world. Because of these rumors running around, Josephus himself says that it's not said about anybody else besides Vespasian. And therefore, Vespasian sees himself as some sort of messianic demigod of sorts based on these predictions, and he's not alone. We see Josephus, other historians quote this in the name of Josephus or the wise men of the Jews, this idea that Vespasian was the chosen leader at the time. And therefore, Vespasian might see the line of Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon, the Nisim, the Davidic line, as a challenge to that messianic view. And that might be why they were persecuting or killing the line of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Gamliel, or the Nisim, is because of this problem. That's why Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yair, asked him to intercede and stop the killing of the Shoshelet of the Nisim. Right now, Asvatin Messiah the Rabbi Tzadok. What was the cure that they did for Rabbi Tzadok? Again, this is interesting because this is true of anybody who's starved. Unfortunately, after the liberation of the camps in the Holocaust, the people had starved for so long saw food for the first time. And unfortunately, there were numbers that died just from the fact that they ingested so much food or so fast that it killed them. They have to do it in a gentle manner, in a slow way. And here, that's what the Gemara describes for Rabbi Tzadok, who'd been fasting for 40 years. How did they cure him? Mahi, what was his cure? Yom HaKama Shkua Maya de Pare. The first day they gave him water of Pare, as Rashi says, Mayim Shinishur Ben Subim. Water that had bran soaked in it. So it wasn't pure water, but it had water with some substance to it. The Machar, the next day, well, that means literally the next day or after a certain period of time, Mayim de Sipuka. They gave him Mayim de Sipuka, as Rashi does over here, Subim Gasim. Bekerayimach Mu'rabo. Some thicker bran with a little bit of flour. The Machar, the next day, Maya de Kimcho. They put water with flour. Ad ravachmei porta porta, till his stomach slowly expanded. So they understood this problem. Again, that's what is important with someone who starved and hasn't eaten for a long time, is that they have to eat slowly in order to allow for the recovery of the stomach, the expansion of the stomach, to handle the food that is put in there. Azal shadre the Titus. He went and he sent back Titus. Again, he didn't send them back. Titus is there, but Titus' son takes over the siege of Yerushalayim. Now, it's interesting here, again, the Gemara's view of Vespasian versus Titus, which is Vespasian was just almost as bad as Titus. He's the one who lays siege. He's the one who starts the siege on Yerushalayim and could have finished it. He just went to be emperor. Gemara definitely has a bias to the positive side about Vespasian and to the negative side about Titus, because Titus is the one who in the end destroys the Mikdash and Yerushalayim. And that's likely because Vespasian was the patron for most of the historians that were writing at that time, which probably biases the history, including that of Josephus. Interestingly enough, while Titus is in Yerushalayim, laid siege, the Herodian dynasty that is ruling at the time, which is Agrippus, and his sister Bernice are very supportive of the Romans and supportive of the Romans in the battle. There were Jews who were supportive of the Romans, and we find that by certain cities up north that were supportive of the Roman conquest, and they are spared and turn out to be great cities. You can go up north to see the city of Tsipori, which is excavated in the north, and that city of Tsipori survives because they are supportive of the Romans and flourishes during this period of time and during the Korban, because the Jews there were supportive of the Roman conquest. Some suggest that Bar Kamsa came from a northern city in Tiberia and were supportive of the Roman government. But one of the interesting things is that Bernice, who is the sister of Agrippus, who's the last installed king of the Jews, ends up having an affair and, in all senses, marrying Titus. She stays married to him for many years until he goes back to Rome. When he goes back to Rome, she was rejected, or the people, whether it was his mother or someone else, did not like her, and that caused him to get rid of Bernice. But Agrippus and Bernice are given strong or big positions within Rome. She's banished a number of times from Rome, twice, when Titus, one when he comes back the first time, and a second time when he comes back to be the emperor, she comes to join him, and both times she's thrown out of Rome because the Romans are not quiescent or fond of the Jewish princess being his wife, and therefore she's rejected. But it's interesting again here, that continuation of the story with Titus being married to Bernice, who is quote-unquote Jewish, main descendant of Agrippus, depending on how Jewish that line is of the Herodian dynasty. So he says, the quote from the Pasuk in Azino, where is their God, their rock, which they took shelter under? And where's their God? That's a description of Titus, who was cursing and blaspheming towards God in his conquest of Yerushalayim. Masa, tafas zonabi yodo, he took a harlot in his hands, v'nichnas beit kodshi ha-kodeshim, went into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, Yitzia Sefer Torah, he rolls out of Sefer Torah as a bed, v'avar aleh aveira, and he does the terrible act inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Natal Saif takes the sword, v'gider et ha-parochet, sticks it into the parochet, nasanes, v'yadam v'atzveit v'yotzei. And there was a miracle that happened, that blood started to ooze out of the parochet. Kusavur ha-raget atzmo, and he thought, atzmo here is a kinui for Kodesh Baruch Hu, he thought he killed God. by doing that. Shnemar, Shagutz Arecha Bekerav Moadecha, that your enemies are crying out like the lions, they're roaring like the lions, Bekerav Moadecha. As Rashi describes it here, the word Moed comes the word Va'ad, the place where they come to meet you, meaning in the house of God, they're screaming out like lions, roaring like lions, Samuatutam Otot, and they make their signs like a sign, meaning that the sign of the blood they saw as a sign that they had killed God. B'chanan Omer, mi kamocha chasin ka. Who is like you, God? Mi kamocha chasin v'kasheh. Shata shumeo ni utso v'gidufo shel oto rasha. You hear the blaspheming of this evil individual, but she'll take and you hold yourself back. And God is able to chasin hitapek, to hold himself back and not take retribution on someone who is cursing him, blaspheming him. Despite that fact, he holds back and allows him to believe that he really killed God at that time. Who is like you and those that are silent? Because the word elim that is spelt in the pasuk is spelt chaser yud. So it looks like the word elim. And who is like you amongst the silent ones? Because God again held back here and allowed him to believe that he was killing God or destroying God. Masa natal teparochet vasokamin gur gutni. He took the parochet and made it into basically a basket. He takes all the kelim of the mikdash, v'nicham ben, puts it in there, v'oshivam b'spina, he puts them into the boat, v'lelech l'ishtabech b'iro, to go get praised in Rome for his conquest of Yerushalayim. And we know that in Rome, by his father, it is dedicated the Ark of Triumph of Titus. The Ark of Titus is put up in his honor and depicts the pictures of him bringing the spoils of Yerushalayim to Rome. So we know that this is part of that story. Shnamar v'chein ra'iti rishayim kvurim uva'u umimakom kadosh yaleichu v'shtachachu ba'ir asher kein asu. So here it's truthfully, it's a negative pasuk. It says, v'chein ra'iti rishayim kvurim, I see rishayim that are buried, uva'u umimakom kadosh yaleichu, and they go from these holy places, v'shtachachu ba'ir asher kein asu, and it'll be forgotten in the city what they did. So it says, altikra kvurim ele kvutzim. Don't say buried, but rather gathered. Altikra vishtachachud, they'll be forgotten, and ele vishtachachud, they'll be praised. So here the Gemara makes these changes. The Marsha himself points out the difficulty in the changes that the Gemara makes in the Pasuk. Ikadamri kvurim mamash. Some say that it even means the real buried ones. Dafilu mile dimitamran iglai lehon. Even things that were buried were exposed to them. What was their day burying was where you kept your treasures, your gold and silver, because that was the safest place to keep stuff is to bury it. That's here a reference to the fact that Titus was able to find all their things. The Gemara makes the changes. The possibility is that Titus is trying to be anti what the Pasuk is saying. Which is the Pasuk says that there are Rishayim that are buried and never remembered. So Titus wants to ensure that he is going to be remembered when he is buried. And therefore he takes all the gold, the silver, all the plunder of the Mikdash and sends it to Rome in order to ensure that he will be remembered and he's successful at that, because the Ark of Titus does exactly that, commemorates him forever in this conquest of Yerushalayim. Again, for the Roman Empire, it was also a big conquest because they had been at war for at least 3 to 4 years already over this issue, and it had drained the resources of the Roman army as well. Amad alav nachshol shebiyam letovo. He shipped all the stuff from Israel back to Rome. And while they were at sea, there was a large storm or waves were coming to sink the boat. That the God of the Jews only has power in water. Paro comes, he drowns him in the water. Sisra comes, he drowns him in the water. Again, he is trying to drown me at sea. Igi borhu yaleli abashav yasemi milchama. Be so strong, let him come onto the shoreline and do battle with me. Yatztabatko v'amra lo, Rasha ben beno shel Esav Arasha. A wicked person, the son of a wicked person, the descendant of Esav. Viria kalo yeshli be'olami. I have this light creation in my world. Smav ito shaman, it's a gnat. Amai karile biria kala. Why is it called the biria kala? Demalna itla mafakna leitla. It has a mouth to eat, but has nothing to send the excrement out. Alali yabasha v'tasei ma milchama. Go on to the dry land and you'll do battle with this little net. Allah liyabasha bayitosh v'nichnas bechotmo, went in through his nose, v'nakar b'mochosh shevashanim. And it pounded away at his brain, on his skull for 7 years. And that it was pecking away, giving him headaches and causing him problems for 7 years. Yom achad av kocholif abova de beinafcha. One day he was passing by a blacksmith's store. Shema kol arzavta. He heard the banging of the hammer on the anvil. Ishtik. And this little Yitosh stopped. And all of a sudden the headache went away. Amar ika takanta. He says, I now have a solution to the problem. Koyoma mighty nafka. Umachu kamei. So he said, every day I'm going to have a blacksmith come and pound in front of me. If it was a non-Jew who did it for him, he would pay him 4 zuz. The Yisrael, if it was a Jewish blacksmith, it's enough that you see me in pain, that you see your enemy in pain, that's already your payment for the fact that you came here and had to pound in front of me all day. It worked for 30 days. Came in the dosh. After 30 days, the little bug got used to it and went back to his pecking. Meaning that, I guess, like a woodpecker, part of his experiences when he pounds and pecks away, that gives him a certain amount of solace. So whether he did it himself or was done from the outside, it helped him. But the hammering on the outside helped for a certain amount of time, and that placated this little gnat that was inside his head. And then, after a certain amount of time, it didn't do anything anymore. He went back to pecking away. Tanya Amar Rabbi Pinchas ben Arova, Ani Hayiti ben Gdolei Romi. I was amongst the Gdolim of Romi. Kshemeit patsu et mocho. They split open his head. Umatsu boket zippor drawer. They found something the size of a sparrow inside of his head at that point. Mishkal shnei slaim. That was the weight of 2 sklaim. Here the Marsha speaks about the fact that a tzipor drawer, the bird, is a siman to Klal Yisrael. And it was the idea that Klal Yisrael, again, will be left whole and freed and fly away. Or the idea that this was the revenge of Klal Yisrael on Titus, or from the birds in the Brit Ben Abtarim of Avram Avinu, it's at tzipor lo vatar. That he doesn't split the tzipor in half, again, because that's representative of Klal Yisrael. Menita tano in a bright that we have, kigozo ben shana. It was like a pigeon that was a year old, mishkal shnei litrin, weight of 2 litrin. Ani amrei naktinan, we have a misora, piv shel nechoshet, its mouth was made out of copper bronze, tzipornav shel barzel, its claws are made out of iron, kavamayit. So when Titus dies, which is interesting, Titus eventually takes over for his father Vespasian. He's actually the first blood son in the Roman Empire to take over for his father and to succeed his father. He only is emperor for 2 years, and he dies of illness. He catches a fever and dies of illness 2 years into his reign. Here, the description of the story is interesting because he does die from illness, and he does not survive very long. Here, the Gemara attributes it to this little gnat that's in his head. You should cremate the body of Titus and then spread his ashes over the 7 seas. So that the God of the Jews can't find me, Velukma Bedina, and prosecute me for what I've done. So that's his idea. Unculus Bar Clonicus. Bar Achte di Titus Avi. Unculus Bar Clonicus was the nephew of Titus. We know there are other stories of Unculus. He's the nephew of Titus, which Gemara likes to do in many places, which is that these people are famous Geirim that we have, they connect them very closely to very, very evil or big leaders amongst the non-Jews. Right, Baile Grue, he wanted to convert. Azal Aske the Titus Benegido. He brought up Titus, who actually calls here Balat Ov, through sorcery. Amale Man Choshim Ba'u Alma. Who is important in the world to come? Amale Yisrael, the Jews. Says, Ma'ulid Bekugei Behu, should I join the Jews? Amale Milayu Nefishin, Velo Matze de Kimimhu. He says that there's too much to do, too much to learn. You can't join them, you'll never be able to succeed. Zil Igre Behu. Bahu Alma, Babid Resha. Goes, go instigate them, provoke them, fight with them in this world, because then you'll be a leader. Dichtiv, Bayutzarel, the Rosh. The ones who cause pain or difficulty, who fight against the Jews, were made into leaders. If you want to become a leader, the best way to become a leader is to become anti-Semitic, and that will make you a leader very quickly. Now, whether that's because you are the one persecuting, or people like people who persecute the Jews, and therefore you become a leader because you persecute the Jews. So, kol ha-meitzar li-Yisrael, na'aseh rosh. So they have this mesorah that anybody who causes difficulty for the Jews becomes a rosh. You see here in the bottom, he adds in the note, klomar, kolim she-meitzar la'em na'aseh rosh, shalom yu b'yadu ma'shvila masarit banav. Here, he quotes from the Tosafot in Chagiga. The Tosafot in Chagiga says, why is it that the person who instigates or provokes or causes difficulty for the Jews becomes a leader is because, Tosafot says, so people shouldn't say that Bnei Yisrael are given over to these lowly people, lowly nations. That the people who persecute them or killing them are of a higher stature, of a higher nature. That's a certain amount of kavod to Klal Yisrael that the people who are persecuting them are these types of leaders or great people. What happens to an individual who does this? Meaning that might be good in this world, what happens in the next world? But my the Pasik Anafshe says whatever he decreed on himself, that's what happens. Koyoma Maknashe Le Likitme. Every day they collect all the ashes of his cremated body, Udanile, and they bring him to Din Bikalulahu, and then they burn him again, Umavadru Ashevyame, and then they spread him amongst the seven seas. The psukim that were quoted before with regards to this, the Marsha and others note that if you look in that perek in Tehillim, that Shalgut Zarecha Bekerav Maladecha, that many of the psukim there describe or hint at what's being described here in the Gemara, that over there the person is suggesting that God does not have control over the seas, or God is not the leader of the seas. He relegated that to his lower people, and part of the perek Tehillim there is about that God rules over everything. That God was over the Yam and everything else, as well as the fact there that it says, V'noral kol svivav, which is a pasuk right before, Mi kamocha chasin ka, that says that God is medakdek, b'tzadikim k'chut ha-sara, that God is very medakdek on the tzadikim and punishes them for any little thing in this world. And right after that, you have the idea that the rishayim are flourishing. So this idea that in olam hazeh, the tzadikim get all their retribution so that they can go to olam haba, and the Rishayim are given free reign, so they use up all their zchuyot. Azal aske the Bilam. So Unkelos brings up Bilam, Benegida, again, through sorcery. Amalei man choshi ba'u alma. Who's important in the world to come? Amalei Yisrael, the Jews. Ma'u leiv dechu behu. Should I join them? Should I convert? Amalei lo didro shlomam v'tovatam kol yamim. You should not get involved with them. Don't look out for their good forever. Which is a play on the Pasuk by Amon and Moav. So here you have a balance. Remember, Bilam doesn't say to do bad to them. He just says stay away from them. Don't look out for them. Don't do good for them. What's the punishment of such an individual? He's boiled in boiling semen. Rashi says here, because Bilam gave the advice to the Benot Midian to be mizaneh with Bnei Yisrael. And therefore, his punishment is in this boiling semen. The Marsha over here says, Lule Rashi, I would have explained this because he slept with his donkey. And sleeping with his donkey, he's punished in the boiling shikhvat zera. But either way, they see this as a midah keneged midah, the punishment for Bilam. Azal aske benegida leposhe Yisrael. It brings up the poshe Yisrael through sorcery. Amalei man choshi ba'u alma, who's important in the world to come? Amalei Yisrael, the Jews. Maulid bukebo, should I join them? Amalei tovatam drosh, ratam loji drosh. Should only look out for their good, not anything bad. Anybody who does something wrong or provokes the Jews, it's as if they're touching the pupil of their eye. It's impossible. It's something that is so painful, so difficult that you can't do it. So do it here. Anybody who starts up with the Jews ends up in a bad place. Someone like you, when you did this, what happens to you? You are boiled in excrement. That is the punishment for the Poshe Yisrael. The Marsha just suggests that it is a lowly and disgusting thing. So that's what it meant there. They're boiling an excrement. It's just something very negative. And that's the connection here. That anybody who makes fun of the words of the Chachamim is put into boiling excrement. So that might be the connection here to the Poshe Yisrael. And then Gemara's name makes a comment, like a narrator's comment. Tachazi ma ben Poshe Yisrael in Ivei Umot Olam. Uvdei Avodah Zarah. Look what's the difference between the Poshe Yisrael and the Nevi'im of the Umot Olam, who speak to Hashem and have Gilui Shechinah through the Nevuah, because here you see what Bilam answers him, and you see what, the way that the Poshe Yisrael. Poshe Yisrael say, just do good, don't hurt the Jews, and Bilam, on the other hand, is like, don't Yisro Shlomam ve'tobatam. Again, Bilam's a little better than Titus, but the Poshe Yisrael here show their, call it their Yiddish Neshoma, and their spark in them that keeps them to be Jewish. Tanya Amar Rabbi Elazar Borei Kama Gdola Kocha Shel Busha. See how strong the power of embarrassment is. Shesia Kodesh Baruch Hu Bar Kamsa Be'achriv Et Beito V'Sraf Et Heichalo. Because Hashem helped Bar Kamsa because of the embarrassment that he faced. He caused the destruction of his Mikdash, Sraf Et Heichalo, and burned down the Mikdash. Again, whether that is Midah Keneged Midah, which is that the Busha is like the taking of the life of the individual. Kol Mivayesh Et Chaverot B'Rabim Zekilu Shofet Damim Zekilu kills him. Therefore, that led to the Churban Abayit, Midah Keneged Midah, or that you say that the Busha is something that's not physical, but it's a spiritual side. It's the nefesh of the person feeling that, and therefore the spiritual side of Klai Yisrael was wiped out. Or the Marsha talks over here, he took away the Nefesh Adam because in the beginning of the Torah it says that Vayipach Ba'afav Nishmat Chayim, God blows the life into the human being. Vayihi LeNefesh Chaya, then he became a living being. Over there, the Unkelish translated it as L'Ruach Memalala, he made him a talking being. And over here, the sin of the people was the way that they talked, whether it was through the Lashon Hara, the Sinat Chinam, or the embarrassment caused, their sin was through the Ruach Memalala. Through their speaking was their sin through the Nefesh. So over here, again, the Nefesh and the Shema B'nai Yisrael was taken away from them. That was the Churban HaBayit. All right, I'm going to stop over here by the two dots on the top of Nizayin Amud Aleph.